Well, hello everyone. It is time to read the Des Moines Register for this Wednesday, February 14th, 2024, Valentine's Day. All of us here at Iris would like to wish all of you a very happy Valentine's Day and hope your day is filled with love and good cheer. So it's time to read the Des Moines Register. All material heard on Iris is intended solely for the use of Iowans with a print disability. I'm Dennis May, and my partner at the microphone for the next 90 minutes is Barb DeHeck. For the first hour, we'll cover local and national news from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. Our second hour starts with birthdays and obituaries, followed by opinions, sports, and lifestyle news. We'll wrap up our broadcast with Dear Abby. Support for today's readings comes from the Des Moines Register and donations from individuals and listeners like you. Learn how you can keep the volunteer voices of Iris going strong at iowaradioreading.org. And now let's take a look at the weather and the headlines from today's Des Moines Register. Our statewide AccuWeather forecast. It calls for a mild day today with a shower in the east and in the south, turning cloudy near Des Moines later today, some sun in the north and west. The forecast for Des Moines calls for a high today of 53 degrees with a low of 29, turning cloudy and mild today. On Thursday, a high of 39, a little bit colder, low of 25 across the area, turning cloudy and mild. Turning to the front page of today's Des Moines Register, on the front page, bill defining man, woman draws hundreds to hearing. Advocates see measure as an attack on gender rights. Lee Rude from Reader's Watchdog writes, is prison near for dating app scammer? And Senate backs aid for Ukraine and Israel. And here to get us started with today's Des Moines Register is Barb. Take it away, Barb.
Thank you, Dennis. A bill defining man and woman draws hundreds to a hearing. Transgender Iowans accuse lawmakers of trying to erase them, while others urge legislators to stand for biological truth at a heated hearing at the Iowa Capitol on a bill that would define man and woman in state law. Two dozen Iowans spoke Monday night in an hour-long public hearing on the bill, House File 2389, while outside in the Capitol Rotunda, hundreds of protesters with LGBTQ+ and transgender rights flags shouted and cheered throughout the hearing. Governor Kim Reynolds introduced the controversial bill earlier this month. The legislature would add new definitions of man and woman to state law, as well as require changes to birth certificates and government collections of data. The bill has drawn widespread condemnation from LGBTQ+ rights advocacy groups, who branded it as erasure of transgender and non-binary people and a violation of privacy. Republicans fast-tracked Reynolds' proposal last week, advancing it through subcommittee and committee hearings over the course of an afternoon over the objections of Democrats and advocates. Reynolds has described the legislation as a women's bill of rights, while opponents say it would not only harm LGBTQ Iowans, but could impact other services like aid for sexual assault and domestic abuse victims. Denise Bubik, Deputy Director of the Family Leaders Church Ambassador Network, said she was thankful that Reynolds brought the bill forward. It is legislation based on biological truth, she said. Actually, none of us would be here today if it wasn't for biology. God created woman and man, period. Max Mowitz described themselves as a proud Iowan. The legislation will likely cause many LGBTQ Iowans to leave the state, Mowitz said. But I cannot bring myself to do the same. Being an Iowan is just as important to me as being trans, Mowitz said. This is my state, too. Every time I come to this capital, I am reminded of how much I love a state that does not love me back. The atmosphere in the room grew tense at times, with one speaker describing transgender women in women's bathroom as engaging in domestic terrorism, and another likening being transgender to joining a cult. Representative Skylar Wheeler, Republican of Hull, who ran the hearing, stopped the speaker several times throughout the night as chants of "You will not erase us" echoed through the frosted glass doors of the committee room. "We're going to hold off until that stops," he said at one point. "I know when you're in here, you can probably hear fine, but as I said earlier, we're not going to have a heckler's veto." Acting on signals from those standing just outside the committee room's doors, the crowd began chanting, while proponents of the legislation spoke inside. When the crowd got word that Wheeler was pausing, they initially quieted down before breaking into another chant in response, saying, "We won't play your game. That's not why we came." During the hearing, others gathered in the hallway, strained to hear testimony, holding their phones to their ears while the live stream pulled up. When it came to a close, chants were amplified as the room emptied, and some of those who were in the room joined the Rotunda crowd. "We'll keep showing up," they chanted, before dispersing, also shouting expletives directed at Reynolds. Barry Stevens, a gender-fluid 13-year-old, said the law attempts to write them out of existence and would endanger LGBTQ Iowans. "Because you seem to need a reminder, gender is how we present ourselves to the world, and sex is based on anatomical, genetic, and chromosomal details," Stevens said. "You can know my gender based on how I present and introduce myself. However, you cannot know my sex without accessing my medical records, genetic testing, or you being a creep." Josh Briggs, a family of four girls, said it was ridiculous that the legislation was needed, but he said opponents of the bill forced the need for this legislation through their totalitarian tactics. "It does not take a biologist to understand that males and females are different, not just in sexual organs, but size, shape, respiratory systems, skin, hair, nervous systems, brain, sensory immune systems, tissues," he said. "The science is truly clear." Reynolds' bill would define sex, female, male, woman, girl, man, boy, father, and mother in state law, and require new birth certificates for transgender Iowans to include the sex assigned at birth and current identity after the state registrar receives a notarized affidavit from a licensed physician or surgeon stating the reason for surgery and the person's changed sex designation. During committee, Republicans amended the bill to remove language that would require transgender Iowans to get a new marking on their driver's license to identify their sex assigned at birth and current identity. Several speakers took an issue with a line in the bill that says equal does not mean same or identical, and that separate accommodations are not inherently unequal. "I am confused why we are here discussing the concept of separate being equal and how our governor believes this bill is constitutional. We all know separate but equal is inherently unconstitutional," said Annie Sarcone, director of the Des Moines Queer Youth Resource Center. Geraldine Jones, a mother from Linn County, said it's simple to define a woman's biological makeup. "I find it insulting that we have legislators and school board members and others in positions of authority that find it challenging to define what a female is," she said. "That's unacceptable. You're supposed to be standing on truth."
Moving now to our next article on the front page of today's Des Moines Register. This is Lee Rood's Reader's Watchdog. Is prison near for a dating app scammer? John F. Clark has had his luck with the ladies, but this Valentine's Day, that good fortune is petering out. For years, the 55-year-old Des Moines man has found marks easily on dating sites despite a rap sheet, including nearly two dozen felonies dating back to the late 1980s. Even when caught, Clark never did much time. His modus operandi is well documented in reams of court cases. Gain the trust of single women, pose as an employee of a cell phone company, gain access to their phones, service plans and credit, and purchase electronics including cell phones and Apple watches that can be sold or pawned. Before the women knew what hit them, Clark is gone. But in December of 2023, Clark's past started catching up with him. He'd been featured by then in a few television news reports in Iowa and Nebraska, outed by some of his reported victims in Facebook chats, and amassed a stack of complaints to Iowa's Attorney General, and with local law enforcement agencies in at least six Iowa counties and five states. Some women leaned hard on law enforcement to arrest the career criminal as he started finding women in new states. Mary Grinnell, who lives near Madison, Wisconsin, said when she met Clark last year through Facebook dating, he told her his name was Jonathan J. Lucas. She said she tried looking for any criminal history in his background, when they connected last August, but she found nothing. Grinnell, 62, said she made the mistake of telling Clark she'd been abused by a former partner, and he used that to gain her trust. He kept saying, quote, "You're going to be treated like a queen going forward. I want to show you what a real man should treat you like," end quote. In time, the two grew so close they talked of living together, and Clark's daughter called her Mom Mary on telephone calls when he came to visit. Donna Weber, age 54, lived almost 7 hours away from Grinnell in Columbia, Missouri. She said she also met Clark, who went by Jay Lucas, on Facebook dating a little later last fall. She said he told her he worked for U.S. Cellular and was from Davenport. She said she wasn't all that interested because he lived so far away. But the more we talked, the more attracted I was. More and more, he was being that person that you want. Like Grinnell, Weber said she tried to check out Jay Lucas's background on the internet. "I couldn't find him on social media," she said. Neither Clark nor two of his defense attorneys could be reached this month for comment. In 2023, imposter scams were among the top five types of complaints Iowans brought to the State Attorney General's Consumer Protection Division. Dating or romance scams are a subset. In 2022, nearly 70,000 people in the United States reported romance scams to the Federal Trade Commission, with reported losses reaching $1.3 billion. The median loss reported was $4,400. Catching offenders can be difficult because the perpetrators often use technology to victimize people and employ different aliases and move between jurisdictions. Clark's long rap sheet includes convictions in Johnson, Lynn, Marshall, Polk, and Story counties in Iowa, and numerous counts of theft, identity theft, forgery, and parole violations. Though he's labeled a habitual offender under Iowa law, judges and prosecutors have let him take plea deals, only to have him commit more crimes, court records show. In 2020, for example, Clark was charged twice with felony theft with stealing from women in Blackhawk and Linn counties, and later convicted. In a subsequent case, not long after that in 2021 in Polk County, Des Moines resident Bailey Goodwin reported Clark, then living in Ames, had gained access to her Verizon phone and used it to order a new cell phone and Apple Watch for more than $1,700, purchases he admitted making, court records show. Goodwin could not be reached for comment. Clark received suspended sentences ranging from 5 to 15 years and probation in the three 2020-2021 cases, court records show. It was while he was on probation for those crimes that he eventually traveled to Monoma, Wisconsin, to meet Grinnell. She said the relationship progressed quickly and the two talked of buying a house together. Clark, she said, had told her he'd been relocated to Wisconsin from Iowa by Verizon. In little time, she said he was putting constant pressure on her to upgrade her cell phone. She said that one day, when she was distracted while working as a security supervisor at a Wisconsin Badgers football game, Clark persuaded her to add him as an account manager on her phone so it could be upgraded faster. And that's when he started buying up a storm, she said. By November, after he'd run up thousands of dollars in purchases on her credit cards and with Verizon, their relationship was over. In hindsight, she said, she's disgusted with herself because she missed a number of red flags. He told her he had $200,000 to help buy them a house. He didn't. He disappeared one weekend when he was supposed to meet her daughter and grandson. Workers at the Verizon store where he said he worked said they'd never heard of him. One time, when he'd gone AWOL, she said he sent photos of himself in the hospital, claiming doctors thought he'd had a stroke. "I felt like I was trusting blind person," she said. "But he's very, very convincing. He looks you in the eye, and he says things like, 'I will make sure I'm there for you always.'" Out more than $20,000, Grinnell said she went to her local police department in Monona and reported that she'd been defrauded. She said that at first the officer told her there was nothing he could do because she'd given Clark access to her phone account. Later, she said she went back to the police with a pile of evidence showing charges on 3 credit cards in her Verizon account, as well as evidence of his past history defrauding other women. "I had to put together the whole freaking case for them," she said. Grinnell said Clark left her with cards exceeding their limit, damaged credit, and in a dark, dark place. "Going into Thanksgiving, I was emotionally burned out," she said. "My family didn't celebrate." Weber said she was left feeling the same way in December after Clark swindled her before the two had their first real date. She said last October he was supposed to come for one but didn't, making excuses. Later he texted that he'd wound up in the hospital, sending her the same pictures in a hospital bed he'd sent to Grinnell. He told her medical workers thought he'd had a heart attack, but he promised to come the following weekend anyway, she said. After he failed to FaceTime with her before that next visit, he apologized and insisted he was going to make it up to her by buying her a new phone, she said. She said he'd kept telling her she needed a new phone, though she didn't really think so. She said Clark called her cell service provider and paid for a new phone for himself and for her, as well as accessories, which he drove to Missouri to bring to her. But then he turned around before they even had a chance to go on a date, saying he'd forgotten he had a dentist appointment. Weber soon learned he'd used someone else's credit cards to purchase the phones. The charges he made with her provider got reversed and put back on her account, she said. "This happened before Christmas. I didn't have Christmas. I didn't even put up a tree," she said. Weber began some internet sleuthing, eventually learning who Clark was. In time, she said she found another woman who had been scammed by Clark on a Facebook site where people check to see if they are dating the same people. The two women formed a private Facebook group that now includes about 20 different reported victims. The women have talked on the phone, swapping stories about how they met Clark on dating apps. They tracked his court cases, compared emergencies he'd used to explain sudden disappearances, and laughed when they learned he'd sent many of them the same nude photo. "Some people hadn't pressed charges," Weber said. "Some are very traumatized by the whole thing." But later December, Clark was not only being outed to law enforcement by more alleged victims, he was in deep trouble with his probation officer. He cut off a GPS monitoring device in November and failed to show up for probation appointments that month, court records show. The probation officer also learned he'd been arrested on a theft charge in Windsor Heights for allegedly stealing 10 Lotto scratch tickets from a Hy-Vee Fast and Fresh where he worked, court records show. In addition to the new crime, Clark was wanted by Monona police for what he reportedly done to Grinnell and was charged in Boone County, Missouri for allegedly scamming Weber. He's also being investigated by the FBI on a referral from the U.S. Attorney's Office, court records show. With a tip from a victim, or a past victim, Clark was arrested on December 20th at a Marshalltown bar in connection with his outstanding warrants tied to the alleged probation violations. A probation supervisor in Iowa's 5th District, Danielle Bailey, has written the court that she will not agree to any sentencing recommendations other than prison. He is currently on supervision in Blackhawk, Linn, and Polk counties for the very same behaviors he has most recently committed in Missouri and Wisconsin, Bailey wrote in a report to the court. "He left the state of Iowa on multiple occasions without our knowledge or consent, violating interstate compact laws and his probation here in Iowa. After cutting off his GPS bracelet and then failing to report into the office, we believe him to be a flight risk." Clark has until a trial on April 8th to decide if he will take a deal to resolve the probation violations related to his past offenses. The deal would have him serving a 15-year sentence in Blackhawk County, as well as a 5-year consecutive sentence in Polk and another in Linn County. If he rejects the offer, he risks being prosecuted as a habitual offender, which could mean even more prison time, court records show. In the meantime, his alleged victims are monitoring, what prosecutors and the FBI eventually do. Many, including Weber, say they still have not recovered. She said she had to lean on her eldest son to help her financially after she was defrauded, and she's selling some of her possessions to pay him back. Quote, "I feel hurt, I feel betrayed, and I'm mad," she said. "I've cried about it for quite a while. I'm broke. I'm just broke."
The Senate backs aid for Ukraine and Israel. The U.S. Senate passed a $95 billion foreign aid bill early Tuesday by a 70-29 vote, after a lengthy battle that highlighted deep foreign policy rifts within the Republican Party. The package would appropriate $60 billion to support Ukraine and send $14 billion in military assistance to Israel, $9 billion in humanitarian assistance to Gaza and elsewhere, and nearly $5 billion to defend Taiwan. However, its fate is questionable. House Speaker Mike Johnson has said his chamber will not consider the legislation because it does not include border security provisions. Proponents of the legislation, including most Democrats and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, see Russian President Vladimir Putin as a threat to democracy in Europe. An investment in Ukraine's effort to hold Russia at bay would prevent the involvement of American troops down the line, they argued, should Russia succeed and feel emboldened to attack an ally in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. If you want the world to remain a safe place for freedom, for democratic principles, and for our future prosperity, then America must lead the way, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said on the Senate floor after the bill's passage. And with this bill, the Senate declares that American leadership will not waver. Senator Mitt Romney, Republican of Utah, called it the most important vote we will ever take as United States senators. He was one of the 18 Republican senators who repeatedly blocked a filibuster by their peers in the days leading up to the final vote. The majority of Senate Republicans, however, opposed advancing the aid. They cited hesitations to use taxpayer money to support a war in a foreign country, while there are other issues to tackle at home, and increasing federal debt. "We ought to be taking care of America's problems before we take care of the world's problems," said Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, who led efforts to slow the passage of the bill. Much of the funding that would be set aside for Ukraine would go to U.S. defense contractors. Nearly $20 billion will replenish the Department of Defense stockpile of weapons and equipment it has already provided to Ukraine. Close to $14 billion would go to a Defense Department program in which the agency buys new weapons for Ukraine from U.S. manufacturers. Senator Ron Johnson, Republican of Wisconsin, called it a completely depraved justification for this war, that the funding would build up American industrial base or create jobs. "Putin is an evil war criminal," he said, "but he will not lose." Some left-leaning senators, too, voted against the bill over concerns about supporting Israel's continued bombardment of Gaza. How does it happen that despite waging a horrific war which has caused massive suffering, that the U.S. Congress is about to send another $10 billion of unrestricted military aid to Israel, Senator Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont, said Sunday. "It is beyond comprehension to me." Many Republicans who voted against the bill also contended that the package failed to include a plan to secure the United States' southern border. Republicans killed a bipartisan agreement last week that would have made significant migration policy changes. Senator Kyrsten Sinema, independent of Arizona, one of the lead negotiators on the border deal that fell apart, quipped Monday that if Republicans want an aid deal with a border package, they should build a time machine. Former President and Republican frontrunner Donald Trump's opinion on the legislation seeped into the debate, like the bipartisan border deal agreement before it. The slow march to passage dovetailed with comments Trump made at a campaign rally in South Carolina, in which he said NATO allies need to pay 2% of their GDP to military readiness, or he would, quote, encourage Russia to do whatever the hell they want, end quote. He also wrote on Truth Social that the U.S. should stop giving foreign aid without the hope of a payback. That suggestion gained steam among some Republicans as the final vote approached. Even Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, a consistent defense hawk who has been a vocal proponent of the aid, said Monday night that he would support the package only if the aid were given as a loan. "President Trump is right to insist that we think outside the box," he said. Despite clearing the Senate, the bill's path forward in the House is murky. Johnson's pledge to reject it leaves Democrats and centrists in the House with one main option, forcing consideration through a tool called a discharge petition, which would require a handful of Republicans to join with Democrats to get 218 signatures. It's rarely successful, but Republican Senator Tom Tillis, Republican of North Carolina, told reporters he had discussed the possibility with House members. Democrats have pledged to use every available legislative tool to force a vote, and some moderate Republicans have already begun arguing for the move. Idiot, former Representative Adam Kinzinger, Republican of Illinois, wrote on X Monday after Johnson said the bill would not be considered in the House. Quote, time for a discharge petition or for three Republicans to vote against every rule until Johnson agrees, Kinzinger said. You will not win unless you fight fire with fire.
Turning now over to the Metro and Iowa section, the headlines, Saydale School Board approves a four-day week. Clive Hotel slated to become apartments with amenities. Bill would add training for nursing home staff. And House Republicans push back on Supreme Court ruling with new transmission line legislation. I'll start with Stephen Gruber-Miller and Galen Baccarari's article, Bill Would Add Training for Nursing Home Staff Would Address Frequent Complaints of Facilities. Iowa's nursing home staff would undergo new training with the state under a bill advancing in the Iowa House. The measure, House Study Bill 691, would require the Department of Inspections, Appeals, and Licensing to conduct joint training twice a year with inspectors and nursing homes to cover at least 3 of the 10 most frequent complaints from the preceding calendar year. The department would also be tasked with collecting data and identifying patterns of complaints against nursing facilities. Quote, we want to make sure that both entities are on the same page, the nursing homes and the inspectors, said Representative Ann Meyer, Republican from Fort Dodge, who chairs the House Health and Human Services Committee. So, we want to identify the top 10 complaints in the Iowa nursing homes, and we want to make sure that those are addressed in training. According to data from the U.S. Senate Committee on Aging, Iowa is the 49th in the nation for nursing home inspectors per capita. Advocates argue that the state has been unable to adequately monitor nursing homes, which have seen an increase in complaints and citations. 24 of Iowa's more than 400 nursing homes have closed in recent years, and nursing home officials have said it's difficult to recruit and keep staff. Senate Democrats released a slate of legislation of their own on the issue Tuesday, hoping to spur conversations with Republicans and find common ground to regulate nursing homes. The legislative package from Senators Claire Chelsea, Democrat from West Des Moines, and Janice Weiner, Democrat from Iowa City, would impose more frequent inspections and stricter penalties, study alternatives to institutional long-term care, raise the minimum wage for nursing home workers, and increase the monthly allowance for long-term care residents on Medicaid. I don't know about moving legislation this session, but I do know that many of our colleagues have expressed interest in this issue and getting something done, Chelsea said. Republicans are not expected to take up Democrats' proposals. Earlier this year, Senate Republicans rejected Democrats' calls for oversight hearings into the nursing home industry, including reports of assaults, sexual misconduct, abuse, and neglect against nursing home residents. Weiner remarked that she'd seen no proposals from Governor Kim Reynolds on the issue that would even arise to the level of the package that we've put together here. So I'm waiting, she said. Brent Willett, CEO of the Iowa Healthcare Association, which represents the state's long-term care facilities, said the group is working to make sure its members are equipped to provide high-quality care. Quote, delivering quality care is a continuous process, and there is always more that we can do, end quote, Willett said in a statement. Continuing, which is why IHCA continues to advocate for common sense policies designed to attract, train, equip, and retain more permanent direct care workers in Iowa communities to meet the growing demand for long-term care services and supports. John Hale, an advocate for older Iowans, praised the Senate Democrats' proposals and said a lawmaker should work to implement them even after this week's legislative funnel deadline. "I believe that Iowans expect Republicans and Democrats to set party politics aside and work together to identify and pass portions of the bills they can agree on," he said. "The upcoming legislative funnel should not be used as an excuse for inaction. Many of the ideas can be plugged into appropriation bills to be finalized later in the session."
The Saydale School Board approves a four-day week. Saydale will be the first school district near Des Moines to switch to a four-day week. The school board for Saydale, a district of about 1,100 students, covering part of unincorporated Polk County between Ankeny and Des Moines, unanimously approved the calendar for the 2024-25 school year that includes Fridays off for students through most of the year. The 2024-25 school year will begin August 23, 2024, and end June 5, 2025. The Fridays off for students will begin September 27th and generally run through the rest of the year, with a few exceptions, such as the week of the Martin Luther King Jr. Day holiday in January, according to the approved calendar. Quote, "In aligning all of our school actions to our mission and vision, the four-day school week calendar increases our potential to move the needle in achieving these benchmarks," Superintendent Todd Martin said at the meeting. "If educators have the time to properly plan, prepare, develop professional tools, skills, and strategies, and balance their well-being or mental health, then we hold greater capacity to serve the unique learning needs of each and every student, as well as fortifying our ability to hold uncompromising commitments to quality education and high expectations for student achievement." About half of the Fridays off for students will be devoted to professional development for staff. The rest will be days off for both students and staff. The February 7th and April 4th Fridays could be used as makeup days, including for inclement weather. School days will be 30 minutes longer, so students are still in school for the legally required amount of time. The elementary school day will be 8:30 a.m. to 4:05 p.m. The middle school day will be 7:45 a.m. to 3:15 p.m. And the high school day will be 7:55 a.m. to 3:25 p.m. The district has been considering a four-day week for 2 years. Saydale officials have said switching to a four-day week could improve teacher recruitment and retention in the competitive Des Moines market, free up a day for personal business, boost morale and well-being, and make Saydale a destination for students through open enrollment. Officials also believe the four-day week could improve student attendance and increase time for community service or academic activities. The district will consider ways to account for increased need for child care on the day off, budgeting and staff for nutrition services, activity scheduling, and the impact on meals for students who might rely on the school day for a consistent breakfast, lunch, and snack. Board members said the district will maintain high expectations and keep a close eye to evaluate the outcomes of changing to a four-day week. The rural Martinsdale-St. Mary School District, about 7 miles south of Norwalk and 15 miles south of downtown Des Moines, recently approved switching to a four-day week, KCCI-TV reported February 8th. Other districts across Iowa that have moved to a four-day week include WACO, Cardinal, Marmon Trail, Moulton, Udell, and Murray. And more Iowa districts are reportedly considering it, including Lone Tree and Highland in eastern Iowa, KCRG-TV reported on February 6th.
House Republicans push back on Supreme Court ruling with new transmission line legislation. Iowa Republican lawmakers are pushing back against an Iowa Supreme Court ruling halting legislation that determines which companies get preference to build new electric transmission lines by trying to pass the bill again. The fight stems from a 2020 law that related to competitive bidding requirements for electric transmission lines, giving the, quote, right of first refusal for new projects to companies with existing infrastructure, like MidAmerican Energy and ITC Midwest. The law passed after an overnight debate in the final hours of the 2020 legislative session and was later challenged in court by two companies, LS Power Midcontinent and Southwest Transmission, that said it unfairly prevented them from competing for future transmission projects. Iowa Supreme Court Justice Thomas Waterman quoted extensively from the Iowa Senate's floor debate in his decision to temporarily block the law while a legal challenge played out. Waterman said the bill's floor manager falsely represented the bill and made misrepresentations about its level of support, and he wrote legislators were unsure of what they were voting on. The ruling enraged Iowa Republicans, and Waterman's use of the comments from floor debate in his decision caused Senate Republicans to temporarily refuse to answer questions during the debate last year, before eventually relenting. On Tuesday, a House subcommittee voted 2-1 to advance a new version of the bill, House Study Bill 698. The House Commerce Committee voted 17-5 Tuesday afternoon to send the bill to the full House for consideration. Representative Gary Moore, Republican from Bettendorf, said the issue at stake for him is the integrity of the separation of the three branches of government. "We have a judicial branch, we have an executive branch, and we have a legislative branch," he said. "And in this case, I think the judicial branch was way out of line in their criticism of how the legislature operates." Representative Charlie Thompson, Republican from Charles City, said he agreed with Moore's comments. "I guess the best way to say it is in probably was not the Supreme Court of Iowa's finest hour when they issued their ruling," he said. Both Republicans voted to advance the bill, although they acknowledged it would likely undergo changes. "If there are areas where competition would benefit the process, I think most people would agree that competition should be allowed. But we also have to have a reliable system," Thompson said. Representative Sean Baganowski, Democrat from Des Moines, did not sign off on the bill, but said he would look at any potential amendments. "To grant our existing monopolies essentially a monopoly over all additional transmission in the state of Iowa, to me, is a tough task," he said. "And I was hoping to hear justification why we would do that this morning, and I didn't really get there." Dane Stevens, Vice President of Transmission Development and Planning at MidAmerican Energy, said local companies have an advantage over out-of-state competitors when it comes to mobilizing to rebuild infrastructure after disasters like snowstorms and the 2020 derecho. He said they also know how to build equipment that can withstand severe weather. "That's where the rubber hits the road. Are the facilities designed to withstand those kind of severe events?" He said, "and I would just say that from MidAmerican and ITC's perspective, we've lived here, we've operated here, we know what it takes to maintain that level of reliability that our customers need." Mike St. Clair, a lobbyist for Americans for Fair Energy Prices, said his group opposes the bill. "We do believe that in the absence of a fair market competitive environment, ultimately ratepayers, the consumers out there, will pay higher rates for their electricity," he said.
A Clive hotel is slated to become apartments with amenities. A former hotel in Clive is being remade into permanent housing, and developers expect the first renovated apartments to be available within about 60 days. Jason Grove and Tina Smothers bought Clive Hotel and Suites at 11040 Hickman Road in December 2023. And are working to turn the property into a 119-unit apartment building with mostly studio and one-bedroom units, as well as a handful of two-bedroom units. The six-story, more than 73,000-square-foot building was built in 1974 and last remodeled at least 15 years ago, according to Polk County property records. Grove told the Des Moines Register, "Tina and I, our background has been in finding properties in the right location that maybe need work or repurposing." The former hotel-turned-apartment building, to be known as the McCoy at 8535, has a good structure and location, Grove said. He and Smothers previously partnered on two other apartment conversions. Units at the Village at Grays Lake are former dorms for what had been the AIB College of Business on Bell Avenue in Des Moines. And the Vibe at 8035 is the former Sterling Hotel and Suites at 11428 Forest Avenue in Clive. Bachelor Hospitality Group Incorporated sold Clive Hotel and Suites to Groves and Smothers. McCoy at 8035 LLC in December 2023 for $5.89 million. Badger had bought the hotel in January 2023 for $5.6 million. The hotel was assessed by the county in 2023 at $1.15 million, and the land it's on at $1.18 million. The hotel has offered short-term apartment rentals and extended stay options for studios in one- and two-bedroom suites, some with kitchenettes and others with full-size appliances, according to TripAdvisor and photos on the former hotel's Facebook page. Grove said 50% to 60% of the building's units are occupied. Renovations have started with vacant units, and Grove said the remaining units will be redone as people move out or move to different apartments within the building. He'd like to have all rooms that are available for renovation ready by summer. Mostly, everything is really cosmetic in nature, Grove said of the updates to rooms, citing appliances, paint, flooring, light fixtures, cabinets, countertops, and additional closet space. Smothers said exterior renovation will start in the spring. That will include adding a dog park and a patio, in addition to new paint and landscaping. The apartments will not have dishwashers, and each floor will have communal laundry facilities. But residents also will have access to a fitness center, pet washing station, game room, and package delivery room inside the building. Residents also will have Genesis Health Club's memberships for no extra charge. The club's Hickman Road facility is next door. Smothers touted the building being next to other businesses, including a Starbucks, Subway, and nail salon. She and Grove see the McCoy as ideal for working people, and Smothers said that kind of housing, especially studio apartments, is needed in the western suburbs. Studio apartments at the McCoy will start at $850 a month, one-bedroom apartments at $1,025, and two-bedroom units at $1,425. The studios and one-bedroom apartments will each have one bathroom, while two-bedroom units will have two bathrooms. Grove said water, electric, and internet are included in the rent. Grove said the renovations are expected to cost $1.5 million to $1.6 million, and the project is not receiving any subsidies or incentives from the City of Clive.
Continuing in the Metro and Ottawa section, police say bull euthanized after escaping from Iowa Beef Expo. A bull that had escaped from its handlers during the Iowa Beef Expo on Tuesday morning has been captured and euthanized, officials said. We regret to inform you that, despite our best efforts, the loose bull during the Iowa Beef Expo has been euthanized for safety, officials with the expo said in a statement. We understand the concern this may cause, and we share in that sadness. Our primary focus remains the safety and well-being of the people and the animals at the show. Des Moines Police Department officials first warned residents of the missing bull at around 8 a.m. Tuesday morning. Iowa State Fair officials contacted the police department after discovering that the large bull was missing, authorities said in a social media post. Our thoughts are with all those affected, and we are committed to learning from this experience to prevent similar occurrences in the future, Iowa Beef Expo officials said in a statement. Officials declined to answer further questions about the incident. Also, Des Moines teen charged in fatal car crash. A 17-year-old Des Moines resident has been charged in the death of a 32-year-old man who died in a Southside car crash 2 days before Christmas, Des Moines police said Monday. The teen was charged with homicide by vehicle, operating while intoxicated, and homicide by vehicle, reckless driving, Des Moines police spokesperson Sergeant Paul Parisic said in a news release. Police did not immediately release the name of the youth or who has yet to appear in adult court, Parisic said. He said evidence shows that the teen was under the influence of cannabis when his car was involved in the December 23rd crash. The car was traveling at more than 70 miles per hour in an area where the speed limit was 40 miles per hour, he said. Police said the teen's car struck another driven by Roberto Eduardo Rodriguez Peterson, age 35, of Des Moines, south of the intersection of Southeast 14th Street and Watrous Avenue. Peterson was taken to the hospital where he died. The teen was hospitalized in serious condition. Parisic said charges were not immediately filed because police were awaiting toxicology reports. The police traffic unit is still investigating the case. And lastly here, SEP student faces charges after making terrorist threats. A Pleasant Hill student is facing charges for making threats toward his classmates last week, authorities said. The Pleasant Hill Police Department and school officials received information about a threat directed at a student who attends Southeast Polk Junior High School on February 9th, authorities said in a news release. Authorities and school officials worked together throughout the weekend to investigate the threats before tracking them to one source. A fellow student was identified as a suspect and is now facing terrorist threat charges, the news release said. The student was not identified because they are a minor and Iowa law restricts access to juvenile court records. This is just one of multiple threats schools have been facing this year since a shooting at Perry High School on January 4th. Earlier this month, on February 4th, a bomb threat interrupted an Iowa High School Speech Association competition in Ankeny. Police later determined it was a non-credible threat based on interviews with people involved. On that same day, Perry Police Department officials received reports from multiple concerned parents and students on Saturday that a student allegedly made a threat against the high school. The threats were later deemed non-credible as well, authorities said. Both came 1 month after the Perry School shooting occurred on January 4th. Dylan Butler, a 17-year-old Perry High School student, shot and killed 11-year-old Amir Joliffe, a student at the adjacent middle school, fatally wounded Perry High School principal Dan Marburger, and injured two other staff members and four students before taking his own life.
And returning to national and world news, Grassley and Ernst break with the GOP over aid bill. Iowa's Republican U.S. Senators Joni Ernst and Chuck Grassley broke with their party Tuesday to vote for a $95 billion foreign aid bill. The 70-29 vote kicks the funding bill over to the House, where Speaker Mike Johnson has said his chamber will not consider the legislation because it does not include border security provisions. The package would appropriate $60 billion to support Ukraine, which has been battling Russia since February of 2022. It would also send $14 billion in military assistance to Israel, $9 billion in humanitarian assistance to Gaza and elsewhere, and nearly $5 billion to defend Taiwan. Quote, by strengthening and equipping America to push back against our adversary's aggression, Congress has stepped up to do the job this president will not, Ernst said in a statement. This step is critical to reversing President Biden's weakness on the world stage that has abandoned our partners, emboldened authoritarians, and put American lives at risk, end quote. Grassley issued a lengthy statement in which he criticized members of his own party. He said Democrats could have done more to stop the spread of communism in China during the Truman administration and urged Republicans to take action today. Quote, my admonition to my fellow Republicans is this. Do we want to make the same mistake the Democrats made 70 years ago? I, for one, have no intention of doing so, he said. Grassley said that if Putin is not stopped in Ukraine, he will be emboldened to attack NATO countries in the future, potentially costing American lives. Whether we like it or not, Vladimir Putin's Russia has launched the largest war in Europe since World War II. And if not stopped now, it will only expand until U.S. allies and U.S. troops are dragged in, he said. I want to prevent that from happening. Grassley noted that although the funding has been branded as aid to Ukraine, much of it will be spent in the United States. For instance, $20 billion of the so-called Ukraine money is actually for Department of Defense to buy weapons here at home to replenish our stockpiles with new, updated weapons, he said. $8.3 billion is allocated to greatly expand American military production capacity. This gets put under the Ukraine heading because Russia's full-scale war on Ukraine was a wake-up call that our munitions production capacity is not where it should be in the event we get into a major war. But we need that capacity for our national security, whether we help Ukraine or not. The majority of Senate Republicans, however, opposed advancing the aid. They cited hesitations to use taxpayer money to support a war in a foreign country, while there are other issues to tackle at home, and increasing federal debt. Many Republicans who voted against the bill also contended that the package failed to include a plan to secure the United States' southern border. Despite rejecting an agreement to make significant migration policy changes last week, Republicans killed that bipartisan agreement after former President Donald Trump came out against it, arguing it would allow too much illegal migration. Trump also opposed the aid package the Senate approved. Senator Kyrsten Sinema, independent of Arizona, one of the lead negotiators on the border deal that fell apart, quipped Monday night that if Republicans wanted an aid deal with a border package, they should, quote, build a time machine, end quote. Like the bipartisan border agreement before it, Trump's opinion on the legislation also seeped into the debate. The slow march to passage over the weekend and Monday dovetailed with comments Trump made at a campaign rally in South Carolina, in which he said NATO allies need to pay the agreed-upon 2% of their GDP to military readiness, or he would, quote, encourage, end quote, Russia to do whatever the hell they want. He also wrote on Truth Social that the U.S. should stop giving foreign aid without the hope of any payback. That suggestion gained steam among some Republicans as the final vote approached. Senator Kevin Cramer, Republican of North Dakota, who was undecided Monday afternoon on whether he would support final passage of the bill, said he liked the sound of Trump's proposal. I think Donald Trump is right in terms of positioning assistance for Ukraine and others in a better way that protects American interests, he said. But I think Mitch McConnell is right. The whole Western alliance crumbles without us. Despite clearing the Senate, the bill's path forward in the House is murky. Johnson's pledge to reject it leaves Democrats and centrists in the House with one main option, forcing consideration through a tool called a discharge position, which would require a handful of Republicans to join with Democrats to get 218 signatures.
Dunn says Trump's NATO remarks are a disservice. Republican U.S. Representative Zach Nunn spoke critically of Donald Trump Monday after the former president suggested he might, quote, encourage Russia to attack U.S. NATO allies that don't contribute enough financially to their own defense. I think anyone who would threaten our allies is doing a disservice to our country, Nunn told reporters following a Monday news conference in Des Moines. That means provoking Russia's bad behavior. That means anyone who's going to, and you know, stash intelligence material in their garage or in their compound. These are all things that people need to be held accountable for. I don't care if they're the sitting president or the former president. Trump made the comment Saturday during a campaign rally in Conway, South Carolina. He said he's elected again. If he's elected again, he would weigh whether NATO members are contributing enough financially to the foundational alliance before determining whether to come to their aid if they were ever under attack. Trump said he made the point to an unnamed head of state during an international meeting while he was in office. Quote, one of the presidents of a big country stood up and said, well, sir, if we don't pay and we're attacked by Russia, will you protect us? Trump recalled. And then I said, you didn't pay? You're delinquent? He said, yes, let's say that happened. No, I would not protect you. In fact, I would encourage them to do whatever the hell they want. You gotta pay? You gotta pay your bills. NATO's charter requires member countries to come to the aid of others if they are attacked. Members are asked to spend at least 2% of their gross domestic product, or GDP, on defense to ensure the alliance's military readiness. And Trump has routinely targeted nations that he says have not met that standard. Nunn, a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Air Force Reserve, said national security is a top priority and one of the reasons he ran for Congress in 2022. I also recognize that when we have a situation where we have a president, sitting or former, that doesn't stand up to an adversary or threatens our allies, that we are doing a disservice to our own national security right here at home, Nunn said. Trump's comments have been roundly criticized, included by NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, who said they undermine the organization's mission and put soldiers at risk. Any suggestion that allies will not defend each other undermines all of our security, including that of the U.S., and puts American and European soldiers at increased risk, Stoltenberg said in a statement. I expect that regardless of who wins the presidential election, the U.S. will remain a strong and committed NATO ally. Iowa's Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst and Chuck Grassley gave brief responses to the Independent, also condemning Trump's words. That's horrible, said Ernst, a combat veteran. No American should do anything to appease Russia, Grassley said.
Many Jews report feeling unsafe or hiding their identity. More than three-quarters of American Jews feel less safe as a Jewish person in the United States, and nearly half have changed their behavior as a result, according to a report on anti-Semitism released Tuesday by the American Jewish Committee. The AJC's State of Anti-Semitism in America 2023 report comes 4 months after Hamas' October 7th attack on Israel and amid a subsequent wave of rising anti-Semitism worldwide. It found that those who feel less safe are far more likely than those who don't to see U.S. anti-Semitism as a serious, worsening issue and the status of American Jews as less secure than a year ago. No one should be fearful of being targeted or harassed for being Jewish when walking down the street, going to school, or being at work, said Ted Deutsch, the American Jewish Committee CEO. This isn't a new problem, but the explosion of anti-Semitism since October 7th demands that we take collective action now. The report is based on data collected in a survey of 1,528 American Jews aged 18 and older in October and November 2023. The AJC adjusted its survey to add questions in response to the October 7th event to measure awareness of the attack and the resulting impact on respondents' feelings of personal safety. While the large majorities of U.S. Jews have consistently viewed anti-Semitism as a problem in the United States, 2023 reflects an uptick in the share who hold that opinion, the authors of the report wrote. Moreover, the 2023 results show a sharp increase in the share of U.S. Jews who see anti-Semitism as a very serious problem in the United States. According to the report, 78% of American Jews said they felt less safe because of the October 7th attack, and 46% said they'd changed their behavior as a result, compared with just under 40% who said they had done so in 2021 and 2022. 3 in 10 said they had avoided posting online content identifying themselves as Jewish or revealing their views on Jewish issues, while 26% said they had refrained from publicly wearing or displaying items identifying them as Jews or had avoided certain physical spaces or situations out of concern for their personal safety or comfort. About 4 in 10 Jews in the U.S., or 39%, said they have personally seen incidents of anti-Semitism or heard anti-Semitic comments in the past year, while 3 in 4, 74%, considered anti-Semitism to be at least a somewhat serious problem in the U.S. More than 6 in 10, 63%, of Jewish adults described their community status in the U.S. as less secure than a year ago, an increase of more than 20 percentage points, the report said. 19% said businesses in their community had been the target of anti-Semitism in the past 5 years. The committee said it is calling on Congress and President Joe Biden to take necessary steps to implement the White House's U.S. national strategy to counter anti-Semitism, including appointment of a national coordinator. Now that we have this roadmap, we need to be sure to use it, Deutsch said. The strategy can no longer be seen as a recommendation, but rather as a requirement.
And here's a little note from Louisiana for Baton Rouge. Governor Jeff Landry will deploy Louisiana National Guard troops to Texas, where they will assist in that state's efforts to control an influx of migrants crossing the Mexican border, saying President Joe Biden and Congress have failed to uphold their federal responsibility to seal the border. And in Kentucky, after more than 500 days in Kentucky's foster care system, a toddler who was originally turned over to a fire station in a shoebox as an infant has been formally been adopted.